Hey, welcome back to Viewer's Point, where I will still be giving my unasked for, unsolicited, and unwanted opinion on your favorite TV and movies. Let's go! We are back. Let's go. Yes. Hello. Welcome in. Welcome into another episode of Viewer's Point. It's another day, another way. I don't know. Yes. Okay. So, as the title or description tells you, we are going to be talking about the highest grossing musical adaptation starring world-renowned singer. It's Wicked Time. I mean, this has been a big deal. Despite all the box office success proving that, before it came out, the chatter around it was ignorable. You couldn't shy away from it. Everyone knew we were about to get a Wicked movie adaption, so that is why we're here. But for me personally, I have actually a really special connection to Wicked. That was the first play I ever saw. I saw it in San Francisco. And me and my mom, like, after we saw Wicked, I saw it with my cousin as well. But after we saw it, we, like, went on a play, theater journey. And we saw Aladdin. We saw Hamilton. We just loved going to see plays and going to the theater. And it just was like our little thing. So it's actually really special to me. And Wicked was the worst first one we saw. So good. I remember being, I was kind of young, but I remember loving it. I just remember loving it. So this movie coming out was just like, duh, you know? And so when I went to see the movie, I actually wasn't planning on seeing it when I saw it in theaters. I saw it a little late when it came out, but I was planning on seeing Moana 2, but then just mix-ups and like when things were supposed to happen didn't happen. And I was like, F it, I want to see Wicked because I'm just mad. I just didn't want to see Moana. So I was like, okay. And I went in there thinking, okay, I'm just gonna like, I'm glad it's a movie. Let me just get through this. And I so thoroughly enjoyed it. Like my first watch, I want to give my initial opinions like on what I thought about it. I just enjoyed my time. Like I love that's the things like I love going to the movie theaters and I love just watching movies and that's why it's always like an initial thought when I leave a movie theater and then there's like my actual thought. So it always takes me like 2 days after I'm like, okay, this is what I really think because when I leave the theater I'm just like in amazement. I'm just like, this is incredible. You kind of only remember the great things, I feel like. At least that's unless it's a really bad movie, which I have. Black Panther 2. If it's an all right movie or if it's a good movie, you leave out of it thinking it's great, I feel, when you go and see it at the movies. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it. I think Ariana Grande's performance, and I think that's an opinion I still have. I think she did a really great job in that role. I think Cynthia Erivo obviously killed it. I knew she was gonna kill it, so it wasn't as much of a surprise. I think everyone was kind of anticipating Ariana Grande's and seeing is she gonna sound like a pop singer? Can she act like that? Forewarning, I go on a random rant about Ariana that's completely out of place, but I will also come back to her later in the episode when I talk about her and Cynthia. I didn't really have my doubts, but I didn't have high expectations either. I just yeah, I went into it and I she did a great job. She got a lot of laughs from my audience. I didn't laugh at pretty much anything in the movie. I think there was one joke, and I don't even remember what the joke was. I don't even remember what the joke was, but I remember like I chuckled a lot. Like there was a lot of things where I'm like, okay, I can see how you can find that funny. Like I watch a lot of, I think pretty sure a lot of people do that where you watch something, you're like, okay, I can see how someone can laugh at that, but you're not actually laughing. But there was one line. Don't even remember what the joke was. Don't even remember if it was a joke, but I remember there was one time I laughed at it. But the audience was like loving Ariana and her comedic timing. And her comedic timing was great. Comedic timing was great. I don't find that humor funny, but her comedic timing for those jokes were impeccable. I think she captured Glinda very well. I think it's really easy for that character to get so lost in translation in a way. I think Kristen Chenoweth obviously did it impeccably, but it's very hard to make her likable, and she needs to be likable for the story to work the way it does. So I think she did a very good job bringing that out. And I think that was they also the casting choice was very good because you did need to cast someone who was people already kind of had that trust and connection with, you know, like, okay, you already like her, so it's a little easier to forgive her character's mistakes in a way. But also good on Ariana for flipping the freaking script. I really wanted to say it. She really fit the script. I mean, at the beginning of the year, she was like a whore, she was a slut, she was a home wrecker, she was a this. Everyone was talking about her and saying all these things that I will say I never really cared. Like she's probably all those things, but I just who the hell cares? It's not my life. But all this whole narrative was running, the yes and out, you know, I don't know the album, but and then she comes out with Wicked and everything's just like gone. And that's like honestly the best. It's not, it wasn't even a PR move, but it's distracting people with your work is the best way. Because honestly, at the end of the day, that's what you're here to see is your work. That she's an artist. That is what you are. That is the only thing she's obligated to give you. Her, like, anything else is literally by choice. So unintentionally directing everyone's attention to Wicked was so, like, crazy. I'm like, this was so funny. Yeah, people were really, like, getting on Ariana Grande, like, just a couple months ago, and now she's just like getting all this well-deserved praise, and we've all forgotten. And that's how I think it should be. It's like it's about the art, it's not about the person, because at the end of the day, we don't know these people, so you can't really make any sort of assumptions. But anyways, that's how I feel about Ariana Grande. Her outfit slayed. I actually really liked her outfits in the movie. I can see a lot of people going as Glinda for Halloween. Her vocals, obviously, like I can't even, I don't really, there's not much to say about her vocals. We all knew she would completely dominate, and she really did. She took the vocals above and beyond. I think you didn't, she just sounded like a great vocalist. She didn't sound like Ariana Grande, the pop singer. She just sounded like an incredibly talented and gifted vocalist and hardworking gold vocalist. I hate the word gifted. Hardworking vocalist is what I'll say. So, yeah. And the question being that I started to think was like, could anyone have done that role better than her? I know Dove Cameron's name flew around. I think she auditioned for it. I genuinely, when it comes to like the vocals mixed with the acting chops or the I don't think anyone could have done that. 'Cause a lot of people can probably play those comedic lines or just can act maybe even better than Ariana, but it's like, can you hit those notes? Can you bring that emotion to the songs like she did while still elevating it with your vocal abilities? Maybe not. You know what I mean? Like, there's very few people that I could see playing that. Yeah, and I think Cynthia Erivo and Ariana really took that friendship and love and just complicated relationship between them to another level. And I know there's a lot of controversy, not even controversy, just like kind of calling out of their behavior on the press tour. And I will say, because I even talked to some people in person who thought this, it's like it's weird. It was weird. It was like obviously they're very damaged people. I mean, clearly, because it shouldn't it's obviously like completely valid for something to mean so much to you and for you to hold something so close to your heart. And especially I know theater kids, like I mean I wouldn't consider myself a theater kid, but I was technically a theater kid, and I understand that wholeheartedly. But then there's like a line where it's like, okay, we're crying in every interview, I think we have issues that I think they've acknowledged and they know. So I mean, it was weird, but I just wanted to like, I feel like I had to because it was a big thing. But I did, I watched a few interviews just to like, you know, gather like actual footage of the interviews so I can make a real judgment. And I watched a couple interviews and a lot of them, it was just like, okay, this is Okay, so strange, and this is just getting a little redundant, but there was one interview. It touched me in not the way that I could relate, because I genuinely couldn't. But then what actually kind of surprisingly got me was Ariana when she was talking about how and in the credits she added her dad's name to her name, and that was her name when she first saw Wicked. And I thought that was just very sweet that her dad cried. I just thought that was I it was an emotional it was emo I can tell this is emotional. Like, this experience was emotional for both of them, and you can acknowledge that, but also say, like, I mean, it is a professional, setting, like, okay, but it's fine. Let's move on. So, but in terms of the story, I will say it captured me in the beginning. Like, I was invested very early on, especially in the animal with the animal story. I think that was a very strong point in the plot. I was invested also in the characters of Elphaba and Glinda, and seeing how their friendship came to be. And then you knowing that, the Wicked Witch is dead, and how that unfollows. And it was a good point. I'm so embarrassed to say this, but I'm going to say it because I have to. There was a good, like, all of the film where I forgot it was part one, because it came in the beginning, but I just like immediately like I just it's like it immediately left my brain that this was part one. And so I went through like the whole movie thinking this was gonna be the whole movie, and I left it thinking that as well. I'm not even joking. It wasn't until I got home I was like, it said it was gonna be, no, maybe in the car, but I was like, it said it was gonna be a part two, didn't it? And I just remember being like, no way. I watched the whole movie being like, this is the full movie, and like actually enjoying it. But it wasn't until I got home I was like, that was really shitty, actually. We didn't get any closure for anything. I'm probably not leaving this in, but so yeah, those all were great points. But I do, however, feel that the movie fell a bit flat in the middle. It just started to drag out a bit, and you can tell that they took into account that we have a part two. You know what I mean? We can make a 2 hour and 40, almost a 3 hour movie, and we're still getting a part two. So they really like stretch that, and it really or stretch that length, and you can really, it almost feels like they didn't earn every minute of screen time that they had. And then you leave out the theater realizing we still haven't wrapped the story up yet. There's honestly just a lot of moments and points in this movie that feel a bit dragged and dragged out. I mean, the hot air balloon scene in the when they're in the tower is just one example where it's like, that didn't I don't think it needed to be there. They could have just got to the tower and without all the extra fuss, because it wasn't completely necessary, and I could have cut the run time down like 10 minutes. And there are just many examples of that in the movie that you kind of start to feel, because you're invested, and then you kind of just are let go of that tension and investment you are, and they kind of just leave you hanging a bit, and then they bring you back. But if they just cut out the middleman and cut out the parts that relieve you and cut out the parts that relieve you of that tension, I think it could have been a stronger movie. And that just comes down to the pacing, I think. Again, having a part two, which is, I don't know how I feel about all these part twos. Like, even with Dune getting a part one, part two. By the way, Dune 2 part one was super good. I watched that in theaters as well, and I loved that. But I feel like these part two things kind of make it easier for them to be lazier with pacing and structure, as you're only covering half the story in an almost 3 hour runtime. Like, how the hell? Like, with Endgame, every single thing felt important. Every single thing felt like we were moving to the next to get to the end. And you were on your feet the entire time. You were clinging to your I mean, you wrapped up three phases. You wrapped up more than 10 years of story in a 3 hour movie. That's impressive. When you're doing, a 3 hour movie and it's only part one and it's literally one story, it can be a little bit like, okay. Like, okay. I mean, and it's not to say that the moments that we had weren't great. Like, they were all great and all obviously necessary. Again, I think it really has to do with the part two, part one sort of thing. But I do think meeting the wizard really picked things back up. Although One Short Day, the song they sing when they get to Emerald City, was a number that really lacked in just any sort of individuality and any sort of distinction from the rest of, or distinction from just musicals in general. Just sound like the most generic musical number you'll ever find. And even like the choreography, and I'll talk about the cinematography, and I'll talk, well, not really the cinematography, but I'll talk about the color grade and all that stuff later because that is a big point. But yeah, it just, it didn't introduce the Oz world, I think, the way I think they wanted to. It wasn't magical or new or just like fascinating enough to be like, oh my gosh. Like I wanted to, I was in the theater, like wanting to be like, oh my goodness, but I couldn't quite get there because they weren't really giving that mystical, magical feeling that you get when you're watching someone something that you feel like you would never be able to see in your reality, but you're being shown it on screen, and it's that out of body experience. I think they really relied on the environment to carry the scene, like, oh, everyone's just gonna be so amazed at what's going on around them. They also relied on the appearances of Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth, which was amazing. And I think that was a very smart decision to bring him in that song because nobody was giving a shit about the song. I was like flying out of my shoes. I was like, what? I did not know they were gonna come in. I didn't even know they're gonna be in the movie. And so it was really cool. Although I loved Ariana Grande's performance, the one thing that I just it kind of bothered me, but it doesn't. Her acting reminded me a lot of Dove Cameron, and that's not necessarily a compliment. It's this thing that if you watch Descendants 3 or Descendants 2, Dove Cameron obviously stars in it. She has this habit of, or it's not even a habit, but it's just something I notice as a viewer of. It feels like she's acting to look cute or to look to like she's always trying to look good whenever she's doing something. And you never really fully believe the performance because of that. And I think especially in her case and in that movie she did, it is a very like she's not supposed to be conscious of her looks and her appearance. So it doesn't really work as well as like Glinda. I would get into that, but I had a hard time like really being upset about it because I'm like, well, this is her character, so it would fit in, but it was a little bothersome to me. But yeah, I just felt that a lot of the times she would make certain expressions or certain things, and I'm like, I mean, I it worked, her performance worked, and she I think she gained my trust as an audience member to where I cared about her to a certain extent, but it did start to feel, I'm like, okay, it just feels like it felt like she was acting to look cute. I was like, give me like a real expression, like a expression when you're truly sad or when you're scared or angry. There's an authentic reaction that needs to happen in order to make it believable. Like Cynthia Erivo is a great example of that, and in Descendants, Cheyenne McClain is a great example of not taking your looks into accountability when giving a performance of a character. I just think also acting opposite of someone who doesn't do that, like I said, like Cynthia Erivo or like Cheyenne McClain, you just kind of notice it more. Again, also to point back to my previous point, it is in her character to be really into her looks, to be really into herself, to be very conscious of her appearance, and she's very materialistic. So I can forgive that. Yeah, but Elphaba, Cynthia Erivo, we have to talk about her because I really, really, really enjoyed her performance. I think she did such a great job at bringing the human side to her. Like she really, I didn't even feel like she was a witch. Like I didn't even feel like, and I also feel like we haven't really got there yet, so it was good, but I didn't feel like, oh, she's a witch who has feelings. She just is a human being who's just green. Like she really brought that element of Elphaba, which is, to be argued, the most important element. And I thought she did an insanely great job. I loved Elphaba and Glinda's relationship. I do, however, think I do like what they did with Glinda's character towards the end. With she has grown, but she isn't grown. Like, you know, she's not fully there. Obviously, we see at the end. I mean, Elphaba says it's the best. I'm gonna pull up the. I can never remember the quote. She says how you would grovel in submission to feed your own ambition, and that is a very. That's just. I mean, sums it up perfectly. I think even at the end, you see she grows to care for Elphaba. They become best friends. There's an understanding from both sides. But then when it comes to the wizard and it's all, you know, she's like, Elphaba's like, no, this is wrong. Like, yeah, the wizard and doing all this stuff is my dream, but what he stands for is not right. And I'm not okay with compromising my values for my own pleasure, you know what I mean? But obviously, Glinda's still like, what? Like, no, like, who cares? Like, we're not animals. Like, what? Like, she still has this lack of empathy that holds her back from truly being a good person. I don't think she's at a good being a good person yet. I don't. I think. Just because she claims to be, which is a big thing, is she claims to I do good, you know. Claiming and actually being is completely two different things, and I still don't think she has gotten there yet. And they prove that just by Glinda trying to get her to still work with Madame Morrible, who's literally put her on blast, saying that she's this horrible, green, ugly witch. Clearly, she still has little to no morals when it comes to, like she said, feeding her own ambitions. So I like that. I really liked that we didn't get this like full arc from her yet. You know, it's like that whole thing of like, I have black friends. Like, just because I'm friends with someone who's out of the ordinary, I'm like a good I am removed from being a bad person, or I'm removed from being colorist, or I'm removed from being racist or whatever. I like that about Glinda, because I didn't really like her in the end. Like, I was like, first of all, she's just a bitch, like, throughout the movie. Like, I'm just like, man, she's just not a good person. And she's the worst kind, that she doesn't even realize how awful she really is. To say, for people saying like that's all she knows, I'm just like, you can literally say that about everyone. Like, literally, you can genuinely say that. You can say that about pedophiles and be like, they've been raped as a child. That's all they know. That's my one thing about that argument. I'm just like, that goes for every single person on earth who's done anything bad ever. Like, that's all they know, because that's usually how it works. You do what you learn. If you grow up in a loving, caring, understanding, kind household, those values are going to be passed on to you. If you grow up in an abusive, dysfunctional family, that's what's going to be passed on to you. So I don't know how much you can, you know, use that for Glinda or for anyone, or if you should use that for everyone. But again, like I said, that has to be used for everyone or for no one. I mean, Cynthia Erivo just nailed it. I don't think there's anyone that could have played it but her. Her vocals were just defying gravity. I'm gonna talk about my favorite songs, but Chef's freaking kiss. But let's get on. Let's move on to the actual look of the film, because this was a discussed and debated topic. The saturation, or lack of, should I say, of the film was a big critique, and the director, John Chu, did come out and make a statement on his reasoning, basically saying he wanted to really immerse the viewers in the realism and really capture the human struggles of these mystical, magical characters, just creating a more real relatability to the story and the film in general. And I call BS. No, I don't actually call BS, because I truly think this is what he was set out to do, and honestly, that's what he did. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily what he did, but that's what he set out to do, and that's the look he was going for. So, yeah, I just don't know if that was the best decision. When I saw it in theaters for the first time, because I did see it in theaters, and then I saw it at home, because I saw it at home somehow, and it was horrible, by the way. But when I did see it in theaters, I remember thinking how odd the film looked. Like, I was just like really uncomfortable the first few minutes. I was just like this, I thought it was just my theater because I'm not in a in the US in the best theaters in the world, so that, you know. So I'm like, oh, maybe this is just blurry or, but I had seen movies here before, so I'm like, I know what they're supposed to look like. And I genuinely just blamed it on the theater. And then I saw the reactions. I was like, oh, maybe this was an actual issue. And then I really looked back at certain clips and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't look right. The saturation, obviously, they just completely ha added nothing to it. My issue is that they put so much effort and work into production. I know they built a lot of the sets. I mean, the train that they use, they built it. The a lot of the what would be usually CGI sets were real. They were man-made. They, you know, they wanted to really immerse the viewer in this experience and really create the world of Oz, and that's incredible. I was really happy to see him, like, this is going to be such a great production and it's going to look so amazing, but due to the stylistic decisions it just looked ugly and stale and gray. It didn't fully use what they had already built to its full potential. You know, they I think they relied too heavily on that, and it's just, so you need saturation. You need to bring out some of the color of it. And while there is color, when you dim it down as much as they did, when it like basically it like flattened it just looks, it just doesn't look eye pleasing, and it's a it can be a real eyesore. Like at some time, especially because you see the potential in it. It's different when it's like, okay, this is like what you're giving me, but you can see the colors in the background. You can see the light and the color correction that's needed. But then you're not giving it to me, so it just lacks, and it just becomes an eyesore, in my opinion. There was, I mean, even when they first meet Alphaba for the first time, and she's or Glinda first meets Alphaba for the first time, it's just, it almost looks dusty is like the word you can use, like if you're trying to explain to someone who just like it's just not visually pleasing, and it had such a, it was a such a missed opportunity to be visually magnificent and captivating. And in my opinion, Wicked, it's supposed to be an out of body and like worldly experience, not some place I could drive 2 hours and see in Vegas. Like I'm not, it's not supposed to feel relatable. Like the world is not supposed to, I'm not, I don't want it to be. I think the color grading was a huge miss. It's just everything is just very white balance. Like it's just it's bad. It's in an aggressive amount, and I think yes, like I said, the sets were colorful and vibrant, but the color correction was in fact needed to some extent to really extend the world beyond our imaginations, which is what I believe movies like this should be doing. It certainly didn't need to look as washed out at it as it did. It just it almost canceled out the colorful sets. Like the really desaturated look canceled out the really vibrant colorful sets. So I do think a lot of people are like, oh, people are just finding ways to hate on the film. And I honestly don't think it's that. I think it actually ru in some cases ruins the watch. It ruins the experience. And while you can also stand aside and be like, well, it's still such it's still a good film. It's not an incredible film. It's not a great film. It's not Endgame, but it's still a solid, good adaptation. Also, it's an adaptation. Let's remember that. It's an adaptation. You have a lot of source material. You yeah, it's an adaptation. I mean, that was very a long negative tangent I went on, but I do I did like I said, I really enjoyed the movie when I saw it in theaters. So, I mean, my favorite scenes, because we have to be positive sometimes. The defying gravity sequence. It was an incredible number and sequence. It was well done. I mean, the medium close-ups we got during the song on Arrivo and Grande was so meticulous and so well done, because you just really got to actually feel the emotion from them and actually see it when they're singing it, you know? They're both excellent at drawing from the emotions of the characters and displaying their authentic feeling, improving their connection through their facial expressions when singing. very, very talented in that department. And I do want to mention, they sang live for a lot of it, I think most of it. So incredible. I mean, you can tell. I remember when I watched it, when I was watching it, I didn't know they sang live. I honestly thought they just did pre-recorded and maybe they sang like, I don't know. But when I watched it, you could see it. You could see Ariana's vocal cords like in the first performance, No One Mourns the Wicked. I genuinely don't know the mechanics, so I'm just gonna say you can tell when someone's singing versus lip syncing, especially in movies and TV. You can tell when it's lip synced and you can tell when they're actually singing those words with obviously production added on top. The Oz dance sequence was top tier performing from Erivo. I mean, it touched me. I was in the theater, and like I said, I personally have no relatability towards this. And I'm sure if you saw what I look like, if you guys could see what I look like, you wouldn't believe me. You'd be like, what? But I genuinely don't. I have no relatability to the story in a lot of ways. But she really got me like watery. I was like, and I was watching it so intensely. Like it was so quiet. And I think the direction also was, or the directing was also really great. Hearing every step, hearing every movement, and ruffled dresses and shortnesses of breath, tears. I just loved the raw and unguarded emotion from both of them. And I also love the tiny development we got from Glinda and how she had graduated from performing acts of kindness for validation of others and her own to just doing something because it's the right thing to do. And recognizing that this is wrong, and that also ultimately she was wrong for judging her and antagonizing her without even knowing her. And this still allows a lot more room for Glinda to grow and be better, because right now she's just crossed the line of being a decent human being. Like that's kind of the level she's at that point in the movie. And we see that by the end of the movie, we're shown that. In defying gravity, like I said before, Alphaba states it correctly, and she doesn't or isn't capable of putting any sort of morals or values above her own ambitions. That scene really just helped bring Alphaba and Glinda together to solidify how they found friendship in one another, because before then, there was really no indication as to how this was going to happen. So I think that scene perfectly summed that entire reasoning behind the relationship in a great, concise, it's not really concise, but concise enough scene. I mean, this story, I think the story of Wicked is its strongest point, which is why there's not too much credit you can give to the movie, just because it is an adaptation and there is source material of where this stems from, but just the theme surrounding of it, of idea of shaping public perception. I mean, the wizard has built his entire reputation on that of having everyone in the town fooled, having everyone fooled, and he's still able to put himself on this pedestal, having nothing, just being able to sway opinion and public perception. And then we see him turn that back on Alphaba and how they quickly switch that narrative up. And then we're seeing that with the animals and how they use that power of public perception to then not only keep themselves in a place of control and again power, but also create the sort of idea of evil and who is truly evil, what creates evil, is it even real, is it an action someone makes, or is it perception, or is it, an opinion, or it's a really the answer we're trying to answer throughout this. And so I think that's one of its leading strengths. I think it's one of its best strengths, but it's not really a strength of the movie because it is an adaptation, so it's hard to run that through the ground, I think you can really say the acting and the songs are what pull it through. But even again, the songs, but I think the singers absolutely magnified each song on there. So my favorite songs, because we do have to talk about that. When I first saw it in the theater, it was The Wizard and I. And I just immediately, because that was the first song where I was like, wow, like it was just so enjoyable to watch. That sequence was great. Could just be a Revo, but I loved the melody. It was a really pleasing song to hear. And I still enjoy it even after hearing it a couple times after. Sometimes you hear something first time, and when it's your favorite the first time, it's usually not doesn't usually say the same. It doesn't actually say the same. I don't know if it's like now my favorite, but it's still up there in top three, top two. Defying Gravity was not my favorite. It was not my favorite. I think I heard it a lot outside. I already heard that song before. That song was, I mean, when Wicked obviously was on a play, that's like the thing you heard every time you talked about Wicked, that last verse. I mean, that's just what you heard. So it was very familiar to me. The other songs weren't as familiar. Defying Gravity was very familiar, so it didn't clock me at how great a song it is until a couple listens after I listened to the kind of listened to the album a little bit after, and I was like, oh, okay. This song is great, and I love the way the song builds. I think it's a very slow building song, but it's so worth it in the end. It's composed very well. What Is This Feeling is another one. I love the way it fit into the story and showing their rivalry and their little fits towards each other and the animosity between them. And ultimately, it's just a really fun song that really showcases both of their characters in their most honest light. So I think it just works on every level, on a musical level. It's just a great number. And in the movie, it fits. It's a very entertaining number as well. This song really works in that sense. I know some people were complaining though about, I think one clip went viral on TikTok or Facebook or Instagram or whatever of the Dear Galinda, you are just too good, and people were not happy that they cut out the sounds of the books and them slapping the books because it was almost like a percussion, and it added a layer to the song. And I actually do agree. But I heard it before I actually heard the song and watched the movie, and I was like, oh my God, I bet it's like so different. I bet it's like not as good. And then I watched the movie, and I was like, oh, it was a great song. And I listened to the song like by itself on the album, and I mean it was a difference, and obviously it sounds better in the movie, but it's like that's why you go and watch the movie. But I don't think it was that big of a I think it would have helped had they done that, but it wasn't like a huge, and I'm sure it would have been harder because you would have to isolate it and then take out the other parts that probably didn't sound so I think it I don't think it was that big of a deal. But What Is This Feeling was great. I think it does. The song is done justice on screen, though. Like if you see the movie, you have to see it. You got to see that sequence. That sequence is really, really. It was shot really well. It's one of the few songs. They were all shot pretty well, but I think that one specifically was shot really well. I think The Wizard and I was a little. I didn't like when she was in the grass. It was just such an ugly background. It was such an ugly backdrop and environment for her to be singing that powerful and hopeful song. It was these like yellow, gray, like high leaves. It wasn't even like green. And again, the use of colors was just not very well done. But she brought a lot to it. That honestly, that whole thing was mainly her, because I don't know what was going on besides that. I mean, I think I've said all I needed to say, but one thing I will say is Madame Morrible, I knew she was the devil before. I knew it. I didn't remember from when I saw it, but I for some reason she just seemed off. Like she was not right in the head. She had some kind of agenda. I'm usually never able to catch these things because who knows why, but I'm never able to catch these things. And she was the only one where I was like, I knew it. Like, I was like, she, I think the biggest tell was the way she treated Glinda, even though the way she treated her was how Glinda treats everyone else. So it was, I found nothing wrong with it. But just the way she was treating her, I'm like, she has to have some sort of punishment for that. Because it's a weird thing. Like, even though it's like she wasn't saying anything, she's literally Glinda without a filter, was what Madame Morrible was the energy she was giving off. But I was like, they're not gonna, that's not gonna, she can't get away with that. She can't say all these horrible things and then she's great to Alpha, but no, the world doesn't work like that. So I just knew she, of course she's evil. Of course she's evil. She hates, like, she likes Alphabet. She hate, like, I knew it. Now, of course we have to rate it. Of course we have to rate it. This one is difficult. I feel like I would have had three different ratings. The first one being when I first left out of the theater, which would have probably been a 10 out of 10. And then a few days after, which might have been like a 9. And now I'm settled and it has gone lower. But it is insane how time can just really make you sit and think, like, what actually did I just see? But I think if you were to put everything together and look at it in every perspective, from every perspective of just the way it, of it being visually pleasing, of the acting, of the music, of the pacing, of the structure, it is a good film. It is a good adaptation. That is something that people have not, it is, Hollywood has not been doing well with lately, but they've been wanting to go forth with it, even though it hasn't been working out in any instance besides this one. But this is the first time that an adaptation has worked, a sequel or whatever has garnered the response that it should get. That's the thing. It's not even like a, it's not exceeding expectations. It's more of like, this is what it should get. You're taking something, a classic, legendary, beloved story, and you're bringing it to this day and age and using technology and advanced, just advanced everything, and then creating something from it. It should be a thousand times better. You should get a positive response, and it shouldn't be that difficult. But it doesn't mean it exceeded expectations. I believe people think it exceeded expectations, or people want to believe it did, but it didn't. It just met them. It met exactly what it did exactly what it should have done. Part two, I have no idea. I don't know. Part one, I don't know if this part one, part two is, I feel like I'm already burnt out with part one. I feel like they made it way too, it's a lot. I don't know if part two, what's coming 2 years from now, who the heck's gonna care in 2 years? I think there was a few things that stopped it from being a great film, even though it could have been. This very easily could have been. I'm not even gonna lie, but I think for that reason it deserves a 7 out of 10, which is very high. It's a high 7 out of 10. I'm really curious to see if the if part two can meet part one or it can be better. I honestly don't really remember what happens in the play, like, at all, so I'm So how it plays out will be a big factor, but you gotta have a little bit of expectation considering they pulled this off to the length that they did, kind of. Especially when you've quote unquote set the bar so high, even though you've not. But in mass media, in that way, you kind of have. It's a very rare that you'll exceed expectations because you didn't really do it then. I can't imagine now after releasing the first part, you're gonna do it then. It's a possibility, but I have zero faith. So, on that note, I'm out.